This one is going to be long. I'm fired up, man. Talked for 5 hours on the phone last night with the MGTOW brother. I've got the artillery, and I can't wait to talk about this one because you know that you won't be getting it in the pulpits and the pews today, but it needs to be talked about, okay, to save men of all kinds, of all backgrounds, of all ages. So welcome back. You know who I have to give a shout out to right now to start this talk out. I have to give thanks to Oslo MGTOW. And you know him from the comment section, I know him there, but I also know him from a great Sunday sermon topic suggestion that from David and my call, we have one of the biggest red pill indicators in the Bible, and I would have never thought of this one otherwise, so I thank you. And this will be the third time that we've talked about David in a Sunday sermon. The thing is, it won't be the last time. There could very easily be two or three or four more instances where it's looked at. And one of them is today with David and McCall saying those final words, those curt and sharp words to a woman in our life that is cancer in order to cut her off. Not just the chemotherapy style, but a nuclear bomb on her. Complete eradication, not letting things go any further. And that's what David said to his wife at the time, McCall, when McCall had an issue with him dancing in the streets after reclaiming the throne and bringing the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem. And I'll get to that point. But before I do, I'm going to give you guys a background on this story on David and McCall and just how we get to that point. And this is one of the most red pill stories in the Bible from beginning to end. It discusses things like female nature, hypergamy, and how a woman will often attempt to distract the man from his own personal and spiritual growth and the impact that pursuing a woman will have on the output of a man as well. So if you guys want to follow along, I use BibleGateway.com. It's pretty good. The verses are first, I'll list them in the description. You can look at them. It's in 1 and 2 Samuel. And guys, this story is for everyone. And man, if we read a red pill story, a MGTOW mishap, or another asinine story about a divorce battle, a loss of assets, or children in the news today, it's honestly just another story. What do you expect from the news? What can we expect from modern day society? Nothing, right? Because it's toxic. People are deceived. Women have been bred by feminism. But when we look back at texts from 2,000 years ago, what we see is that the same issues, problems, and events were occurring in society, and in society that hadn't been tainted by 2,000 more years of the problems that have led us to the point we are in Western culture. So what does that do to these messages? And I think that it gives them greater efficacy, and these Sunday sermons hit me hard because they're in a text that is so old, but also because these things have never been discussed. I'm a little bit tainted because of realizing this, and I was burned. Okay, I went to church and I was burned by never being told these things, and I got into relationships where I was completely unequipped. And even if you haven't gone to church before, you're hearing and looking at these stories for the first time, and I've gone to church, I'm looking at them for the first time as well. Because when you're going to a church today, are you ever going to see a sermon on Proverbs? It's better to live on the corner of a roof with a quarrelsome wife. Never. So let's get into it. So Michal was Saul's daughter, and Saul was the first king of Israel, the same one that gave up his armor for David to use against Goliath. And despite being a princess, Michal never showed any type of character. She was a woman that was fixated on power. She was fixated on what power would give her and was the type of woman that would love bomb a man, which is a bad sign. And she probably feigned over David when she saw that he had slain Goliath. She also was very cold, very emotionally disconnected, and was able to say goodbye to her part-time husband, Faulty, when David spent years in hiding. So Michal came into picture after David killed Goliath, and she became fond of him with a passion. Imagine that happening today. You just killed the most threatening warrior, way bigger than you. Man, I don't think there could ever be a more powerful aphrodisiac than killing Goliath. You could probably get any girl. You stand out there and kill Goliath, and I don't care if you're trying to get Jessica Alba or Megan Fox. Okay, you take your pick. I don't care who you throw into the picture. She was completely consumed by David because of this aphrodisiac of killing this symbol, this threat. It signified the ultimate, the upper echelon, the epitome, the apex of power, what she wanted, what every woman wants. And maybe David didn't have the public platform yet, but I highly doubt she would have pursued David as hard as she did if it wasn't for the fact that he killed Goliath. And everyone else would be praising David, thus in her mind, she would have no shame associated with expressing her love, because it was in line with the love that everyone, including the king, was pouring onto him, Saul. And David was often described as being handsome, ruddy, youthful, and strong. And this is not something that is scriptures used to describe everyone. Jesus was told that he wasn't much to behold. And Saul should have given Merab, his first daughter, to David, as he vowed that his first daughter would be given to the man that killed Goliath. So I find this so interesting that a barter would be made for a heroic accomplishment, a barter of a woman. And I think that we often interpret this as something that just rests in a vacuum, and it's something that you did in royalty. You gave over your daughter. But, you know, it proved your manliness as a man. But I think that when you look at it from a MGTOW perspective and understand hypergamy, it's based out of the understanding that power and protection are the ultimate forms of proving yourself to a woman. And the father, Saul, inherently understands this. If he can kill a threat and prove his power, then he is worthy of my daughter, because that's the ultimate thing that she is looking for and needs. Thus, Saul would give over his daughter for a feat such as killing Goliath, and Saul regretted it. He became envious of David, and as a way to get David removed, he put another challenge ahead of him. He needed to get 100 foreskins from the Philistines. Such a bizarre thing. I can't even fathom this one. Going full white knight, David did as we often do when we know that we want to impress a female and earn the respect of her father. We do more than we're told. And so what he did is he got 200, okay? Insane. It's weird to think about. But when Michal was now whisked around like a utility, she realized that I'm not even the daughter that's supposed to be given to David. She now became the one in control for the first time, and she ended up saving David's life after they were married. And things started to shift now. So Michal is David's. She is where she wants to be. But things shifted. Saul was still in pursuit of David, okay? And when Michal and David were laying together one night, Saul had their house completely surrounded by men. He was going to kill him, all right? Saul is off the rails at this point. We often look at Saul and see the first signs in the Bible of mental disorder, which today might be, you know, prescribed. He might be, you know, diagnosed with a mental disorder. And intuition, though, told Michal that they were in danger. So she let him down through the back window of the house, and David escaped and went into hiding in the wilderness. And Michal then went even further and lied that David was sick, played Ferris Bueller, and that he couldn't come out and meet the men that Saul had sent. She put a hair-covered body into bed, and Saul ended up hearing about this. And once again, he was infuriated, and to protect himself from harm, she then followed up to say that David would have killed her if she didn't help him escape, which this doesn't even add up, because all that would leave David is with a dead wife and a dead David. And this is when things started to shift, and in my interpretation, it's what happens in many relationships today. When a woman is trenched in her love for the power that she has and sees in a man from hypergamy, then when that power that she lusts for is threatened and begins to show its weakness and its holes, she loses attraction. And this is accentuated when she has to serve as a saving agent. It's World War II, the Rosie Riveter complex that is created. She realizes her independence. I can save this man that killed Goliath. I don't need him in the same way. I don't lust for him in the same way. Even if it's an illusion of independence, she feels that she's independent now. And anyone can lie, and anyone can let someone through a back window. But in her mind, it means that she can do anything that David can. And his power truly doesn't have the same draw or attraction anymore. Thus, no longer does David. And now, with no husband, let's get another one. David's gone for who knows how long. And, you know, it could be forever. So it must be all right to go with another man, which is partially not her fault, because faulty, her new husband is given to her. And this is what I call the castaway complex. You see Tom Hanks coming back. She has a new husband now. Whereas the man is often not able to let go. And I have a personal story that I might go into one day where I saw this play out in a man and a woman, between a man and a woman. And you can't necessarily fault the woman, because a woman is designed to be more social. Okay, they're more connected to a marriage, union, and a partner, whereas the man is more independent in nature. Okay, he has to be. So she goes and has a new husband. But now look at this. David comes back. He's here. This can't be real, but I have this new husband now. What? And so Michal doesn't even give two wooden nickels about faulty. He ditches him to the curb and goes with David again. And the Bible doesn't even mention an ounce of regret or sadness for leaving faulty when David returns. Michal just, see ya. Okay, bye. It says that she was forcibly returned. She was forcibly returned to David as well, but her love for prestige shown through was not for a man. Her heart was not available for that. His integrity, what he had been through, there was nothing there. There was no sign of empathy. She was empty. And do we hear about this in churches? Why not? I've looked up sermons about this. Are they there? No, they're not there now. And there is no way for them to be there going forward because the churches in the U.S. especially are shifting even further away from how this would be delivered. And this leads into the kicker, the final straw, that which I mentioned before, is when David made Jerusalem his capital. He brought the Ark of the Covenant there. And this man had to slay Goliath. He had to kill 100 Philistines. He had to evade an insane bipolar man after his life. He had to go into hiding. And this man is at a moment of pure elation. He is dancing upon his return to Jerusalem. I finally returned. I've made it. I'm at peace. I'm safe. It's okay. Finally, I don't have to stress anymore. But she would rather see him in sackcloth as he dances around the Ark of the Covenant. He danced without his royal robes. Okay, he took those clothes off. And he was likely dancing probably half naked at this point based on what we read. And he was dancing in front of slave girls no matter what, you know, or even more so, which made her infuriated. And she was so insecure that she couldn't even understand that she was a princess and the king's daughter and now married to a king, that she still felt threatened by David's joy and dancing in front of slave girls, thinking that he was there and doing that to impress them. And this woman was doomed. David and them, they were doomed from the get-go. David was not even thinking about the company around him, okay, those slave girls. And Michal, this dude got Bathsheba. He doesn't even care about these slave girls, but she was fixated on it, okay? And it said that she despised him. And how many of you men, you've accomplished something in your life, something you've been striving for and are proud of, even if it's feeling passionate about working out and improving your body, she doesn't want you to have that enjoyment. And she despised him for his joy and the way that he expressed that joy. And he humbled himself and said, I don't need this affiliation with power that she wants. So I'm going to throw these royal garments away and I'm just going to dance. But he wanted, you know, he wanted to be wearing the clothes. She wanted him to be wearing the clothes that symbolized his power so that she could have it by association. And this is how that final conversation between them went. How glorious. And she says this sarcastically, how glorious would the king of Israel today, who uncovered himself today in the eyes of the handmaids and his servants as one of the vain fellows shamelessly uncovereth himself. And David didn't take it, and he cut things off right here. And they pretty much ended their marriage at this point. Okay, and this is 6:16-23 in 2 Samuel. It was before the Lord who chose me rather than you, or rather than your father or anyone from his house, when he appointed me ruler over the Lord's people Israel. He's like, you know, this was given to me. I don't care what you say. I will celebrate before the Lord. I will become even more undignified than this, and I will be humiliated in my own eyes. And he was doing this out of humility. He was taking off these royal garments, but she saw it differently. But by these slave girls you spoke of, I will be held in honor. And David's pleasure was Michal's pain. They were never in line. They were never in the same wavelength. They were never in love. They were not of one flesh. And out of this, Michal had no children. She was barren. She would end up taking care of her sister's children, and all of them got beheaded. And she would never be able to have what she truly wanted to come of her, which was that royal line, because she pursued her husband out of power. And they pretty much went on to live their lives completely separate from that point. You don't see any mentionings of them. And so what can we take away from this? Is this so much you can take away? So many angles that I could go down and you could go down if you read this. And the main thing that I thought of is that a woman of the flesh of the world, she doesn't find joy in the joy that a man does, okay? Everything he believes in his heart to be satisfying and enriching, that to her is an enemy. That is a stab against her own value, because she believes that the only way that he can experience joy is through her, and it's entitlement, and it's often what we see today in marriages, the removal of a man's passion, the removal of even a man's hobbies, and as soon as a man begins to do them in private, you know, that's his, that he realizes this is the only way he's going to be able to express that, because he knows that he can't show an ounce of pleasure in something other than that woman in his life, or else she will be jealous. It's a jealous heart, not in a good way. And Michal is a dangerous woman. When I talk about MGTOW content and concepts and women, I want to always differentiate between the severity of a poison that comes in women. They're not all the same level of danger and vileness. And some women will put you at even greater danger and peril. And it's not a one-size-fits-all. Michal is along the lines of a borderline woman, I believe. You also have to understand that she has become completely cold-hearted because she has been turned into a pawn. And Saul didn't value her much, as much as his other daughter. Thus, he gave her to David. Afterwards, she was given to another man and then turned around and given back to David. And if you've been with a woman, and maybe you're listening and you still want to get with a woman down the road and get married, don't act like her familial history and background is insignificant. You cannot separate the two, and you can't separate a woman from it, you know, as that played a huge role in their relationship and how it played out. And one of the first things I noticed is love bombing. And this is often talked about. I remember watching a talk by 21 Studios where this idea of love bombing, and I've noticed it in relationships that I've had. So right when David killed Goliath, you know, McCall's like, oh my goodness, I cannot have anything but this man. I don't see anything other than him. I'm fawning over him in every way. Please acknowledge me, David. And she knows at this point, if she doesn't openly express her love for David, then any other woman will jump in and try to do that. You know, Bathsheba does it down the road. And so she takes the spotlight and makes her affection public and likely showers him with all kinds of praise. And this is a sign of a dangerous woman. And in my life, my ex would flower me with praise that I truly it does not apply to me. Ultimatums and infatuation that I look back on, I'm like, wow, I should have been aware of this. And phrases like, I've never come across someone that thinks like you. I don't care if you're talking. That's what she would say. I'm like, I'm not Socrates here. And I don't care if you're talking to Alexander the Great. If this occurs in the beginning of a relationship and love bombing occurs frequently, it's because they're often fixated on the idea of you and they're viewing you as a filling to a hole in their personal identity. And McCall was fixated on power. There was something missing here. She didn't feel honored probably by Saul. And David was that piece that would fill this hole of insecurity that was created by Saul not being present. And McCall was insecure in her own family and even against other women, clearly feeling threatened that David was dancing for the attention of some slave girls. It's petty. And watch out for this love bombing. This right here is more relationship advice and an examination of female nature, this first point, but I have to share it with you because it might potentially save you not only from bad relationships with women, but seemingly platonic relationships that mirror this process as well, even with friends, with business partners. And the next thing is even David White knighted, but to what extent? Okay, so David was ordered to kill 100 men. Are you kidding me? That's a death sentence. It should be a death sentence, or at least I think he would buckle or not do it. He ended up not just doing that. He ended up killing 200 men. He got their foreskins, all of them. It's absurd. I can't even fathom this. It's almost as crazy as Samson tying up all those foxes and setting those fields on fire. But what it illustrates is how much a man is fueled by the urge to be a white knight and to prove his worth to a woman, and even more so her father, by going above and beyond. And I know that I have done absurd things for women. I've driven ridiculous distances, spent more than I needed to, done projects that she actually never cared about or asked for, all because I was looking to prove myself to her, not really in her eyes, but in my eyes. And in actuality, she does not care about these things. She does not count things as you count things. You're not working. She's working in the metric system. You're working in the US system of inches, all right, and feet. It's like going to war, and in your mind, the fighting that you do and the people that you save in war and the enemies that you kill, you think that what you're doing is adding up and that her love for you is increasing with each thing that you do and accomplish, and it doesn't. Her affection doesn't waver. Her affection is something that she controls and decides. You're not in control of it. And with that being said, never do more than you have to for a woman, but never do more than you have to when it puts you in unnecessary danger in anything in life. And I believe that sometimes we do have to walk that extra mile with somebody, especially when they're in position of lowliness and need genuine help, but only do it when there's no expectation of receiving something in return, because it will never be reciprocated. And it translated into resentment in this relationship. And David could have died. Not worth it for McCall, the unappreciative, power-hungry woman. And the next thing is when she does something for you, her interest for you wanes because of the power removal. And that's what we see when she saved David. And this harkens back to that point. Only after she helped save him by luring him out of their house is when, you know, the relationship started to go south, not because of just their disconnection and distance, but because it removed It removed that invulnerability from David. And often when a woman is consumed with lust for power, she will lose interest in you when you show any ounce of vulnerability, when you begin to admit things about yourself. And you don't know how she is going to respond to your weakness. This is why you have to be meek-minded and honest about yourself to people in life. Because if, you know, life is going to bring these things out. You're going to show the chinks in your armor at one point or another. You cannot hide them. And if you see early on that she doesn't like it when you're honest about your shortcomings, then you need to get out, okay? Because they're going to come up. And it's going to be too far in a relationship, and all of a sudden, she doesn't like you. And this showed just how much she was in love with the idea of safety, protection, power, and invulnerability. But if she was his savior, David wasn't special anymore. What else could I do? What else could I love about this man? And all women have this complex to some level, hence things like a strong build, a man dressed in nice clothes, or someone that's succeeding in business will always be preferred. Or the man in uniform coming home from war will always be more attractive. But I know that when I admitted my flaws and concerns about myself, my ex-girlfriends thought I was either being too emotional or I shouldn't be feeling those things and that I should be stronger than them or than those issues. And in actuality, a man without some doubts is not a man. It's part of our DNA and you cannot avoid it. And you understand what process you need to take and what plan you need to put forth by knowing your weaknesses. And that's why a woman can't be in love with you for power, because you're going to be knocked off your horse at some point. Your plane is going to take flak and she's going to have to be there, not because of your power, but because of her own dignity and value of commitment. But does that exist today? Hardly. And if it didn't exist with the King of Israel in BC times, good luck attaining it. And the next thing is her coldness and disconnection with love. And this just blew me away. And I never picked up on. McCall went with Faulty when it was convenient, the other husband. He was the orbiter that she went with when David was no longer an option. How pathetic. Faulty is weeping after McCall left and is deploring what is happening, but it never mentions once that McCall had love for him. He poured his heart into her. But when the better option came back, she leapt from one branch, as that orangutan would, monkey branching her way on the royal ladder. I'm not comparing her to orangutan, I'm using that metaphor. McCall clearly had unresolved bitterness about men, and it was leading her down this empathetic, and cold path. And I know my ex had some traumas, and it led her to have a certain view about me and life and other men that caused her to describe men in a pretty awful way at times, violent and vengeful. And women are painted on false canvases today as being the love agents always in a relationship. Men are now the romantic catalysts, I've found. Men are expected to be the ones filled with romance. She is just the one receiving it. She is passive. And a man's heart is made soft through relationships, but this is never said of a woman because it doesn't happen. A woman is not described as becoming tamer or softer through love and through marriage. It's just a man. And this just amazes me right here. The disregard for Faulty, and I don't know what else to say, guys. It just kick him to the curb. And finally, your happiness, guys, can't be separate of hers. And that's a dangerous thing. And the sign of a controlling relationship or a relationship with a woman that has a lot of trauma and an inferiority complex built into her, or maybe even some personality disorder or abuse in her past, is that you have to have all of your satisfaction and happiness derived from her. And I keep reiterating this point, but David wasn't even gloating over himself. He was dancing in praise. His spiritual satisfaction in McCall's eyes was actually a mark against him. She didn't want him to grow closer to God and instead wanted to have his spiritual joy derailed. We're told in churches that men are the ones that are disconnected from God and are distant and are not spiritual. But when a man does act out on it, he's no longer attractive. When a woman is wanting the rebel, that is the most unattractive thing. So what is a man to do? Okay, many women are threats to men's spiritual direction. And finding joy in something else, God is almost perceived as being unfaithful. It's not as attractive, especially when a woman is fixated and attracted to the rebel, the one that foregoes association with any type of social structure or entity, which is often the church today. And this is not to say that it's just blaming women for this. This is a product of the sickness, okay, and the poison that has just seeped through what we value in society. And what was David's meat, you know, his meal, his nutrition? It was McCall's poison. What was sweeter than honey to David was the gall and wormwood to McCall. At the despicable sight of David dancing, she spat at him and sank back in her seat with all hell in her heart. McCall is a diving, divine looking glass for all angry and outspoken wives. So Alexander White, Theologian, thank you for saying this better than I could have ever said it. Don't let a woman get in the way of your own path and satisfaction, because the type of pride and joy that you get out of your own pursuits, and often your spiritual pursuits, will far exceed the long-lasting joy of the woman or any other person, even a friend. And it's so rare to have your own goals separate of her and to be lined up with her, though, at the same time. And that takes sacrifice, and she may support them, but a man's goals will almost always be different than that of a woman's. And a man and woman business partnership in a marriage, talk about rare. It does happen, but it's rare. And don't act like it can be always achieved. And it didn't happen in the Old Testament, and won't happen today, most likely. So in conclusion, guys, just look at how insecure Michal was. David had loftier obligations. He had his own problems. This guy was horny beyond belief. He had concubines. But Michal had all that she needed. She had all that she could have asked for, yet it still wasn't good enough, and she didn't get the kids that she wanted. She was fearing slave girls would dethrone her. Okay? That's insecurity. Okay? Imagine coming back home after being in exile or being at war and having your life threatened. You want peace, joy, and happiness. You want to be with your wife, but what do you get? You get contempt from her. No harmony was attainable or possible. It couldn't be reached. There was no chance of it, no understanding, and there was no tolerance for anything other than herself. And I don't know what else to say, man. This has been my longest sermon yet, and I hope that has reached you and it hasn't repelled you and you've stayed through this. It's about 25, 26 minutes, okay? And I hope that you were able to listen to it. I know that this story won't be told in churches today. That's why I'm telling it. And as a result, men are not waking up, and they're getting burned every day. They got burned like me. All right, they nearly lost everything. They almost drove their car off a cliff with marriages and relationships that were never meant to work. But they were intended to subscribe, men were, and believe that they had to pursue this marriage to fulfill their calling as a man in the church. Okay, that is not the truth. And men, we need to be cunning and we need to be wise, and we can't be naive anymore, because that was me. I was the naive boy that went to church and believed that I acted rightly and justly, then that woman would love me and be faithful. And more pitfalls are being thrown in the way of our path daily, okay? These talks, I hope to do that. I hope to help make us aware of where these potholes are, okay? Because I know I needed myself to be saved. I don't want someone to drive their car off the cliff. And I want to save someone out there. I want to save myself. And I want us to be able to achieve all that we can, not because we want to be selfish, but it will allow us to live the life that we would have hoped for and hope for other people to live. And red pills are in every corner of the Bible, regardless of how you view it. There's nothing new under the sun. And it does say that it's better to live on the corner of a roof than with a quarrelsome wife. And that will never be the scripture reading of the day. So amen. Hoodies up, brothers. Let me know what you have to say and what other topics you want me to look at. I'm here to hear them. Dave's dancing. We're dancing. Hoodie's up, man. Hoodie is out.